If you like talking hockey with your friends, you'll love talking hockey with Commissioner Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM204.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Gary Bettman, and welcome to the NHL Hour. We are coming to you live on NHL Home Ice, XM204, and NHL.com. The call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. That's 1-877-645-6696. And the email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. With me today is neither Bill Clement nor Bill Daly. I invited Frank Brown. For those of you who don't know Frank has been with the league office for 10 years. He is the group vice president of media relations. And before that, he, for 18 years, was the lead hockey columnist for the New York Daily News, somebody who has, at least until he came to the NHL, was greatly respected and admired in the industry. Frank, let everybody hear the sound of your voice.
It is very nice to be with you today.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask you a question, which will put you on the spot. You travel with me quite frequently.
I do.
What is the worst or the most annoying part of traveling with me?
Ooh.
Well, there's dead silence.
Silence.
I'm not that wonderful to travel with.
No, it's...
Isn't TV. We can't have long pauses.
No, I understand that. I understand that. The funny thing is that I don't... When I'm with you, I don't process good, bad, or indifferent. I just keep going because it's not a lucid thing in the pursuit of my duties, which is making sure that you get where you got to get and that you are prepared for various interviews and things. I don't process weather, although there was one remarkable story of the cold blast of air that greeted us in Calgary one time. That was hilarious. But I think of more good things than bad ones.
You mean it's just so wonderful to spend all that time with me on the road?
Well, for
we don't get a lot of sleep. That's for sure.
That's for sure. But for someone who saw his first game in 1965 and never imagined that I would ever have this life, this is an enduringly remarkable episode in my history.
What do you think's happened to your former profession with the internet and blogging and tabloid journalism? Does it make you want to pull your hair out, or does it seem to be a natural evolution of where things were when you were there?
Well, just to help the listening audience, I will start by saying that any hair that I have to pull out I'd have to start at my eyebrows because I have absolutely nothing left after devoting 40 years to this game. That being said, the clear thing to me is that what has happened with the 24-hour news cycle is by the time a newspaper comes out, there is absolutely nothing that the viewer hasn't seen in terms of highlights, in terms of post-game interviews, and all that is left to the newspaper reporter is really his opinion, because that is the one thing that is original and not yet disclosed. That being said, now newspapers are even in the position of competing with themselves because a person may put his opinion in his blog before his story appears.
So you think sports writers have simply become more opinionated?
They have to. They have to. Before, there was an obligation to report because there was no satellite dish. There was no 24-hour radio. There was no satellite radio. And because of all of those things, the role of the reporter has changed dramatically.
Interesting. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I do think what we read in many cases is opinion, and some of those opinions tend to be better or worse than others.
Well, that is a function of the 24-hour news cycle, I have no doubt.
Well, before we start taking calls, and to the extent I see the board is lit up, I first want to share with our listeners that we're going to be a little bit out of order this week, and so we're going to take our first guest, who's quite busy. He's got a schedule to keep, and he's got some games to play in the next couple of weeks and perhaps beyond, and so it's my distinct pleasure to welcome Jeremy Roenick to the show. JR, how are you?
Mr. Gary,
how are you, my friend?
I'm great. How are you?
You know what? I'm really good. It's whenever you get past that first round and you escape a very tough beating, it always makes you feel good. That's for sure.
I don't think anybody's ever administered a tough beating on you and lived to talk about it.
Well, not too often, but the Calgary Flames put up a hell of a fight and led by probably one of the greatest leaders in the game right now in Iginla. It was a battle. So we feel very fortunate, but maybe that's a good way to prepare ourselves for what's about ahead of us.
Speaking of preparation, and we're talking to Jeremy Roenick of the San Jose Sharks, how do you prepare yourself on game day for a game 7?
It's excitement. Your stomach is full of knots. It's not so much nervous knots, but for me, it's excitedness. It's the opportunity to raise your level and it's like what I said in the paper the other day. It's to make reputations. It's to build reputations and to define yourself as a big game player. And that's what I said to a lot of the young guys. I said, hey, just picture yourself scoring that winning goal or, you know, making that play that leads to the winning goal or being the hero, because people remember that, and that's important. It's in your career, you want to be known as a guy you can depend on, and that, you know, when you come to negotiating and looking for teams to play for, those things stick out. So, you know, I just keep thinking about positive things during the game, and the excitedness, the adrenaline builds, and by the time you get there, you're focused and ready, and you just let the game go.
Well, you, talking about career games, you had 4 points, 2 goals, and 2 assists in Game 7 over Calgary, and you went from a scratch in Game 6 to one of the heroes, if not the hero, for San Jose in Game 7. Talk about the up and down, the swing of emotion, and the turnaround for you and for the team.
Well, you know, for me, I've tried to maintain a even focus, Gary. One thing in playoffs is you don't want to have two emotional highs and lows. You want to try to stay as focused as possible and not get too excited when things are good and not get too down when things are bad. And you know, that's what I preached in the beginning of the playoffs, so in the beginning of the series. So when it happened to me that I got sat out, I'm like, all right, well, listen, there's a good explanation for this. I mean, either he thinks I'm really tired or he thinks I stink right now and he wants to kick me in the ass and say, hey, get going. And, you know, whatever the case may be, you take it with a grain of salt, you know, that you stick by the team and you do what's right. And next time you get in the lineup, make sure that you show him that it was a mistake and that, you know, what he did was wrong. And he should have had you in the game in the first place. And that's kind of the attitude that I had. And I couldn't wait to get in and just, you know, help the team win. And that's what I've been here for all year. When you get older, Gary, you got to, in this game, you have to accept a different kinds of roles. And sometimes that role might leave you out of the lineup. And as proud a guy as I am or anybody else, sometimes you have to accept that.
It sounds to me, and Jeremy Roenick, who we're talking to, you came into the league in 88, 89. So you've been around and you've seen it all. And the way you're describing things now, it seems that you've reached a level of mental maturity, which probably helps make you even better than you were when you were much younger. How are you physically? How do you get ready from game to game? How does your body deal with the wear and tear of playing the season, playing the playoffs, and being as old as you are? Not that you're old, but you know what I mean.
Oh, no. Yes, I am. In terms of this game, there's no question I am. It's, you know, it took me 20 years. It took me 20 years, 19 years to, you know, to have the kind of mentality of thinking that I have. You know, obviously it's, you know, I've been one of those guys who has spoken off the cuff and has said what's on my mind, and sometimes it's gotten me in some deep water. Both with you and with other teams around the league.
Oh, never with me.
Oh, that's not true. But luckily we're friends, so we can deal with that thing, Gary.
Exactly.
That's okay. But you know, the mental part of it is easy because I love the game so much. The physical aspect is a totally different animal in itself, because it's just your body is so important in this kind of game because it's so physical. The season is so long, and if you don't take care of it by the way that you the way you eat, staying on the bike every day, and lifting weights 2 or 3 times a day, making sure that your muscles are up for the challenge. And I'm skating against young kids now that are just like 6'5", 230 pounds, no fat on them. And, you know, when I came into the league here in 88, there was they had no teeth, beards, and you didn't see one ab on one hockey player. Now he has six-pack abs, muscles bulging out of muscles. And, like, I'm like, you know, they're going to lift weights. And back in 88, we went to go lift six-ounce cans. You know, that was the difference.
When you came in the league, Jeremy, people thought that the idea of training camp was to stop smoking.
Exactly. Well, they didn't even stop smoking in my first year in the league. Denny Savard and Steve Thomas shared an ashtray in the locker room. That's how far back I start.
You know, you talk about evolution of the players. You know, you're now about to start a series that will feature two of the great American-born players, you and Mike Modano. Talk about the development of U.S. hockey since you started and where you think it's headed.
Well, it's been great. I think our generation, I think, put hockey on the map, put USA Hockey on the map in terms of the international competition. We've always, we've always been that team that's teetered on going to the B pool, to the A pool, to the B pool, and then with the emergence of Mike Modano, myself, Tony Amonte, Keith Tkachuk, Matt Schneider, Chelios, Brett Hall, that whole group, Billy Guerin. Dougie Waite, I can go on and on, but I think we were that group that made USA Hockey respectable. And then obviously getting to the semifinals on the in the was it 2002 Olympics?
Yes.
That was, I think, besides the 1980 Olympic team, that was one of the greatest accomplishments that we could have thought of. So, it's kind of going to be interesting to see how it goes from there. Who's going to take over the reins as I leave, as Modano leaves, as Tkachuk leaves? I think USA Hockey's done a really, really good job of developing. Now they have to do it again to make sure that it lives strong, but it's been a fun ride.
Talk about your San Jose Sharks team. You've been on a number of teams. What makes this one special? What about this team and the personalities on it with you that lead you to believe that you can make this a long spring run?
Well, I think we have all the intangibles of a championship team. We have tremendous leadership in Patty Marleau and Joe Thornton and Michael Greer. Those our three captains are just our three go-to guys that are battling their asses off right now. We have a goaltender that is up for the Vezina Trophy this year. That's arguably the best goaltender in the league this year. And we have a supporting cast. We have four lines that you can throw that can score at any time. Our defense is, with the addition of Brian Campbell, is extremely strong. We have stay-at-home defensemen. We have offensive defensemen that love to join the rush, and we have size and strength. We have everything that you need to go far in the playoffs. And it's just putting it all together at the right time and having a little bit of luck. And obviously, our coaches have us tremendously ready and prepared. So. It's a strong team. It's a very, very strong team, and we just, like I said, hopefully a little bit of luck is on our side.
You had a strong regular season. You have home ice. How important is that at this stage of the season?
Well, I mean, you saw what happened against a very, very tough Calgary team. They played very, very well at home, and we played very well at home. So home ice, when you have your fans yelling and screaming and waving the flags and cheering everything that you do and booing the other team, that's a motivating factor in a game seven. That gives you that little push, that little extra incentive to push when you can't push anymore or you think that you've given it all, but that cheer seems to push you from behind. So plus the matchups, you get the matchups that you want against the right players. For us, it made the difference in the whole series.
Actually, it's interesting. I was at the game, I guess it was game three in Calgary, where you went up 3-0 in the first 4 minutes or so, and I actually, sitting there, believed that the crowd's intensity helped Calgary come back and kept them in the game and ultimately
Absolutely.
Enabled them to win.
Absolutely. Especially you get one goal, then the fans start getting – more excited, and they push you, and now you get a little bit more adrenaline, and geez, it's a game turner.
What are you thinking in a game like that where early on you think you have it in hand, and then it starts to get away from you?
Frustration. I mean, severe frustration. It's like there's nothing you can do to prevent the ultimate outcome. Calgary kept coming and coming and coming and coming. And, you know, they chipped away one goal at a time. And as you feel it slip away, you're like, gosh, this team has so much momentum in their own building, and we're going to try to take it back. It's what playoffs are all about. It's frustrating. It's why the mental grind in the National Hockey League playoffs is so difficult. And you have to stay with it. But it's that's why it's the hardest trophy to win in all sports.
We're talking to Jeremy Roenick of the San Jose Sharks. Frank Brown wants to ask you one last question, and then we're going to let you go.
All right.
Jeremy, thank you. I always think that the prominent players on a team get the bulk of the attention. I'm always fascinated by players such as Ryan Clough and Joe Pavelski. Tell our listeners what they bring to the table and if they're your best-kept secrets.
Well, Ryan Clough not playing all year with a torn ACL. He had ACL reconstruction surgery in the beginning of the season. He's been gone all season. So he's had a whole season of build up of energy and excitement to get ready for this. And he's so proud. He's such a strong man mentally, physically. He believes so much in team and sticking up for your teammates and hard hockey that we missed that kind of feeling throughout the year. I think that has helped us, I think, with our physical play, with our ability to go in and go into the dirty areas, to score goals, the difficult areas along the boards. He makes guys accountable for that. As far as Pavelski, the kid from Wisconsin, I mean, he plays like a kid with a college education, just a very smart, a guy who sees the ice very well. He manipulates the ice very well, finds the open guy. He's one of those guys that's always on the puck and seems to come up with the puck all the time. He's like a little, you know, we call him the penetrator because he gets in there into the little tight spaces and he's a great board battler and he's, all the kid does is score goals. In practice, he scores goals, and in games, he's scored a lot of goals. He seems to have a knack for the net, but one thing you can't teach is the brains behind it. He knows the game well. He knows where everybody is, and he can dictate who's going to get the puck when, and it's an amazing thing to watch at such a young age. He's been so good for us.
JR, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Good luck to you and the Sharks. Congratulations on making it
Absolutely.
To the second round.
Absolutely.
And you're one of the great personalities in the game and one of the great players. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. All right. Don't be afraid to come out to San Jose. Cheer us on, Gary, okay?
I'll be out there.
All right, buddy. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you to Jeremy Roenick, a great player, great star in this game, and a great personality. And I do love 99% of what he says. and today he was perfect.
Yeah.
Callers, please stay on hold. When we come back, we'll take your calls. We'll answer your emails all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice. That's XM204 and NHL.com. Welcome back to the NHL Hour. Frank, I notice you frown with bare naked ladies. Frank and I are about the same age and have similar taste in music. And if we're playing music to keep Frank happy, it should be Bruce Springsteen, who he is a huge fan of.
It really was just an opportunity to make fun of Bill Clement, who probably wouldn't have known that this was bare naked ladies.
Well, he would have known. But what's interesting, and it's Gary Bettman here on the NHL Hour with Frank Brown of the NHL as well. We are here. I'm feeling a little naked since I don't have a Bill with me. No Bill Daly, no Bill Clement. But Frank, it's good to have you here.
It's an honor to be the first non-Bill.
An honor might be overstating
in the history of the NHL Hour.
There we go. It doesn't have very long history. We only go back weeks.
It's a grand moment, though.
The call-in number, again, is 1-877-645-6696. That's 1-877-645-6696. And the email address, although we don't get to too many emails, I feel badly for people who email, but we have callers who light up the board and hold for as long as a half hour or more. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. And on that note, why don't we go to the calls? John in New Jersey, you're on with Frank and Gary. This is XM204.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing okay. How about you?
Good, good. I just had a really quick broadcasting question for you. I live here in northern New Jersey. Right now I have Cablevision as my cable provider, and that's how I get NHL Network and Center Ice and so forth. But as you may know, Verizon Fios TV is now operating in my area up here, and I was considering for next season switching to them because I'm not too happy with Cablevision. But as of right now, they don't carry NHL Network or Center Ice. Do you know if maybe next season there are talks to get Center Ice or NHL Network on Verizon Fios?
We are in discussions with Verizon as we speak. It is my hope and expectation that we will have a deal with them. But if you're intent upon having the NHL Network and Center Ice, and I'm glad you are, don't make any switches until we announce a deal, because I can't guarantee that we will have one, although our goal is with all of our media to have as broad distribution as possible and to be available on as many different providers, satellite or cable or Fios-type providers as possible. Why don't we next take Chris in Baltimore? Chris, you're on XM204 with Frank and Gary. Chris? Chris is not there. One more time, Chris in Baltimore. Okay. Why don't we then try Adam in Missouri?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Oh, we got it. Now you came through. Hello?
Oh, yeah. This is Chris in Baltimore.
Okay, yes.
Okay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How you guys doing?
Good. We okay?
Yeah, that's a beautiful day. Can you hear me good?
Now we can.
All right. I just had a complaint about the officiating. I'm a Caps fan, and it's not necessarily, you know, what happened in Game 7. I'm just, you know, want to understand your position on trying to grow new fans, because during the series and during, you know, a couple of the regular season games, I had non-traditional hockey fans with me, and they were like, why is that not a call? You know, why is this a call? And, you know, why are the refs, you know, they say, why are the refs influencing the game? And the only thing I can say is they're sticking in the rules, and I point out the rules to them, and it's nonsensical to them. And they're like, it's really hard being a hockey fan understanding all this. I'm like, yeah, it is. And some of the rules don't make sense to me. So maybe, you know, if you have an answer for me, I'll take it off the air.
No, we'll be happy to answer the question. Our officials have an impossible, difficult job. The speed of the game, and when you're looking at the playoff games that we've had so far, the level of the game has probably been more intense than we've ever seen. And the officials do a great job. They get it right far more than they get credit for. They don't always get it right, both on calls and non-calls. But I don't think that they're affecting the results of the game. Typically, if they're missing calls or they're calling to a certain level or standard, they're doing it equally for both teams. There are always going to be situations where people will disagree as part of their rooting interest and passion for the game in terms of what should have been a penalty and what shouldn't have been a penalty, and it's happening so fast. And the officials, they don't get the benefit of replay. They have to do it in a split second, blink of the eye, and overwhelmingly, they're getting it right. But I'm not here saying that they always get it right, but overwhelmingly, and we had this discussion last week when Steve Walkham was on with me and took calls from, you know, a dozen or so callers. You know, at the end of the game, you know, would you like to see a Game 7 decided on a power play? The answer, it's not your preference, but that tripping call on Pody was the absolute right call. It was clearly a trip, and maybe along the way some lesser trips or questionable trips were let, you know, go. But at the end of the day, if you're not calling that trip, you're not calling anything. So we know that there's always going to be a debate on officiating. And interestingly enough, the feedback we've been getting is some people say we're calling too many penalties, and some people are saying we're calling not enough. we are somewhere in the middle, and the officials and our better officials are now working at this stage of the season are doing a good job. Doesn't mean they're perfect, but no sport where there's a human element gets absolutely perfect officiating all the time. But that is ultimately our goal. Adam in Missouri, you're on with Frank and Gary. This is XM 204.
Good afternoon, Frank and Gary. I am on a mission to give back to a sport that has given me so much. I am writing right now a book that's about 200 to 500 pages that just involves an idea that could really bring a playoff atmosphere to all teams at the end of the season, increase revenue substantially, raise season ticket prices, and I will even go so far as to say that I have an idea that can reduce the likelihood of another lockout. Here's my thought, that the order, the formula to determine draft order needs to change, that it should be based on the number of points a team accumulates after they have become mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, that the lottery selection is just a terrible way to determine who should pick first, and that privilege should be battled out on the ice.
I've never heard that one before, so you definitely get an A for originality. I think my gut reaction is, and it's something I'm going to want to give further thought to, my gut reaction is it doesn't take into account a team that is really bad and needs help. And the purpose of the draft is to try to create more competitive balance and give the teams that have performed the most poorly the most help. The purpose of the lottery was to make sure that nobody had an incentive to lose games. Not that we believe any of our teams would, but the perception of losing games, which is why you're not guaranteed the number one pick, although you're guaranteed at least the number two pick if you have the worst record.
The formula is based on the number of games that you win since you become eliminated.
I know, I got that.
The team that would be worse would have much more games than the teams that become eliminated very last and would be on the edge of missing the playoffs. And so, for example, this year, the Los Angeles Kings and the Tampa Bay Lightning both became eliminated with 9 games left into the playoffs. And so during that time period, Los Angeles was able to accumulate 9 points, and so they should have had the first overall pick. Tampa Bay, on the other hand, only was able to get 5 points during that 9-game period, and so my formula would rank the Los Angeles Kings higher than the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Interesting point, and I'm looking forward to reading the book because, as you said, if you're writing a 200 to 500-page book, you've given this much more thought than we have. But I've made a note of this, and it's something that we're going to discuss and give more thought to. I always like hearing new and creative ideas. Speaking of new and creative ideas, why don't we talk to Chris from Pennsylvania? Chris, you're on XM 204 with Frank and Gary.
It must be Chris Capital Fan Day. I'm another Caps fan.
In Pennsylvania?
Yes, every PA. And contrary to popular belief, not every Pennsylvania resident is a Pittsburgh Penguin or Flyer fan. Wow. But anyway, in regard to the game, game number 7, shouldn't the refs put the whistle away for the entire third period and overtime until the Tom Pody tripping penalty? There's a lot worse that could have been called or weren't called. So I guess just talking about earlier about the fans, try to figure out what exactly is a penalty, what exactly is not a penalty. I was calling more so in regard to the interference or lack of interference call with Cristobal Huea, where the Flyer defender throws and pushed the Capital guy into the goalie and kind of held him down. Is there any thought to maybe using the camera that we have over the net to help the referees upstairs help with the calls in that particular regard?
Well, first of all, as the question relates to video replay, we've used it only for the discrete determination of what constitutes a goal in terms of where the puck is and how the puck got there. We have not, because of 100 reasons I could give you, including the number of cameras you'd need, the disruption to the game on every call, the fact that the line of sight that you get can be distorted depending on where the camera is, and on and on. We don't use it to call typical plays. We don't think our game lends itself to that, and even sports that use it for those reasons don't always have a comfort level that they're getting it right. With respect to the play you're talking about, Morrison had the puck when Thorsen checked him. And that was not goaltender interference. It may have been a peculiar play. UA may have been knocked out of the ability to play that puck, and that's how the goal got scored. But the offensive player did not touch the goaltender, and when he ran into the defenseman was playing the puck. It may be a controversial play. It may be an unusual play, but with the benefit of us having reviewed it in replay, it's not something that we think should have been a penalty. But it is a good question.
One thing I'd like to add, in the course of my career, I was privileged to cover some of the remarkable dynasties. I covered the Islander dynasty. I covered the Edmonton Oilers dynasty. And one of the main beliefs in the dressing room was, if we have to beat the officials, we'll beat them too. There was never a time when officiating entered into their mental toughness was such that adversity was just part of the mix. It's part of being in the playoffs, and it was their belief. And I'm talking about Mark Messier. I'm talking about Clark Gillies. I'm talking about Bob Nystrom, John Tinelli. You go down a list of great Stanley Cup performers through the years, starting in with the dynasty of the 80s and even to the Canadiens of the 70s. And that was what they thought. I understand that the fans go nuts. I understand that the viewers go nuts. I understand that the owners go nuts. But the fact of the matter is, in many cases in the dressing room, the players just keep going.
Well, and you really have no choice if you're going to win. The fact of the matter is, everybody in this game on or about the ice makes mistakes. The coaches make substitution mistakes, line change mistakes, you name it. The players certainly make mistakes, and the officials do. It is a human game. And what happens is, despite 100 judgment calls and non-calls in the course of a game, there are going to be some which aren't right, and there'll be some which are right, but people will debate to the death.
And the focus will not be on the several calls that went their way or the several non-calls that didn't, that did go, that weren't called, that should have been called. It's always that last one. And the objective of the Islanders and the Oilers and the other great dynasties that I've had personal contact with was, it's factored in. It's just like pulling your skates on.
Well, and from our standpoint, it's not that the officials are always right. I mean, part of the passion and the interest in the game is to have these debates.
Oh, absolutely.
And we hold the officials accountable, because if an official consistently underperforms, is constantly getting it wrong when he should be getting it right, if he's out of position, one of the things that people tend to forget, and it's one of the things that I do when I'm watching a game in person, because you can't always tell this on television, I watch maybe more than I should where the officials are standing. And my sense is, if the official is in position and he got a good look at the play, he's probably more right than any replay or any commentator or any fan reaction, because he was there and he saw it. On that note, Doug in Detroit, you're on with Frank and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hi, Gary and Frank. How are you doing today?
We're good. How are you?
Good. I just had a couple. One, I had a suggestion, and then I had a question. First, the suggestion is, I think the NHL needs to promote hockey more and try to get more Division I teams in the United States. And I think one way to do that would be to maybe have exhibition games like in Syracuse, like with the Rangers, and try to get students involved and, you know, broadcast journalists, things like that.
Well, that's an interesting thought. And we used to play at one point neutral site games, but in terms of the logistics and the wear and tear, the fact is our fans in our markets are attending our games with great regularity. In fact, this past season, we set a third year in a row attendance record for the regular season at almost 94% of capacity. And what's also interesting, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but I think we should, we've played 48 games out of a possible 56 in the first round, and every game was sold out. That is the first time, I believe, in the history of the league. And since attendance only gets stronger as we get to the second, third, and fourth round, my guess is we're going to witness for the first time ever that every playoff game will have been sold out, which is a great testament to our fans, and for which I and the entire NHL family is absolutely grateful. Why don't we take another call before we go to break? How about Phil in New Jersey? You're on XM 204 with Frank and Gary. Phil in New Jersey? Hello, Phil. Okay. In that event, callers, why don't you stay on hold? When we come back, we'll take your calls and answer your emails, all on the NHL Hour. This is XM 204 and NHL.com.
Rob Dibble from the show on MLB Home Plate 175. Gary, a former Whaler season ticket holder, I'm still upset about you moving my Whalers to Carolina. That's okay. You're doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
There's a long story that underlies that move, which we'll save for another day. But Frank, Cadillac Ranch by Bruce Springsteen. I hope that made you feel good.
I believe it's Darlington County.
Oh, you're right.
But
See, you are the big fan. That was Springsteen. Very good.
That being said, it's a little bit poignant. You know, the great keyboard artist on the band, Danny Federici, passed away from melanoma last week, and you know, the band took a couple of days off, but. This is a sports talk show, not a music critique. But anyway, our sympathies to them after years and years together and years of making really remarkable music.
Well, you've been a longtime fan.
Absolutely.
Actually, as have I. First time I saw them in concert was 1973, which I think qualifies me as one of their older fans.
I would say.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gary Bettman and Frank Brown, and this is not XM 46 doing classic rock. This is XM 204. And why don't we go back to the calls? Nate in Detroit, you're on with Frank and Gary. This is XM 204.
How you guys doing?
We're good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. The Wings are looking good. I haven't got much to complain about except one thing, Gary.
There's always one thing. What is it?
Let Al twirl the octopus, buddy. It's a huge tradition. We love in Detroit.
Okay, let me respond to that, and because it's a good it's a good question. And Al Sobotka is a tradition in Detroit. The concern is, and we haven't penalized as we could the Red Wings for a delay of game with the octopi being thrown on the ice. The big issue is the twirling it, and the reason that we're concerned about it is octopus goop, or whatever it is you want to call it, comes off and gets on the ice, and we're worried about somebody catching an edge and blowing a knee out or pulling a groin because some little piece of the octopus managed not to make itself off the ice. And so while we understand the tradition and the octopuses or the octopi will continue to get hurled, twirling it presents an issue for us in terms of ice conditions, and we're worried about the players and the conditions and them getting hurt. And so it's not that we're trying to be the Grinch here. We're trying to make sure that nobody needlessly ruins a career or that we have somebody not playing in what should be a great series coming up.
And there are a couple of other very, very important aspects of this. There is never a time when any league can support the throwing of objects on the ice.
You sound so authoritarian saying that. People would expect me to say that. I was trying to give the sympathetic answer, but you're absolutely right.
Okay. It's just not behavior that can be accepted. And it's also something that may have been a great custom and you know, will always be part of Stanley Cup lore. There are things that change from time to time.
Times do change. Dan in New York City, you're on with Frank Brown, the authoritarian, and sweet and cuddly Gary Bettman. This is XM 204.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and I trust your will, too. I guess most hockey fans are rock musicians and rock aficionados, but I'm a little older. I go back 50 years as a hockey fan. And I'm a jazz nut, so
That's good. Well, welcome.
I'll be an exception to the rule. Sure. Well,
welcome to the club. And I'm glad to hear there's somebody calling in who's actually older than I am.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw my first hockey game when I think I was a freshman in high school at the Madison Square Garden on 50th and 8th, and when Gordie Howe was still playing, and I saw the Rangers play the Detroit Red Wings.
Wow. Where'd you go to high school?
Nyack. I'm from Nyack, New York, originally, yeah.
Great town.
Thank you. Anyway, I know when I first came in and I was listening to today's program, you were in the middle of some discussion about the officiating and quality control. So I don't want to belabor the point, but the reason I'm calling is that I know you people probably review game action and tapes from time to time, and I'm just really puzzled and bothered by the quality of the officiating with regard to the goalie interference rule. Now, I'm from New York, but I saw the in the Game 7 of Washington in Philadelphia, and the second Philadelphia goal, the way that was allowed, I don't know where the referee was in position to see that, but that was, to me, that was really a clearly goalie interference, and it was,
By the way,
I hope they're looking at that and that they're going to,
Wait, by the way, let me, and I don't mean to cut you off or interrupt you, the fact is, we don't think that was goaltender interference. We've seen it on replay. It's been analyzed and reanalyzed by the chief of officiating, Stephen Walkham, by Coley Campbell, who runs hockey operations. The fact of the matter is that Thorsson was checking Morrison, who had the puck, the defenseman, and the offensive player did not touch the goaltender. And if based on everything we've seen on the replay, and by the way, in response to your comment, every play of every game is reviewed as it's taking place. We have DVDs. We constantly are critiquing and monitoring and coaching the officials. That was not goaltender interference. It was a peculiar play and had an important result in the game, but it was not goaltender interference. Why don't we take our next caller, and that would be Matt in Spokane, Washington. Matt, you're on XM 204 with Frank and Gary.
Hi, Frank, Gary. This program just goes to prove that hockey is the greatest the greatest sport in the world. You're probably the only commissioner who would deem it necessary to actually speak with fans on the radio.
Well, thank you, but I do it because I think we have the greatest fans in the world, people like you.
I'm an oddity. I'm a West Coast Boston Bruins fan, and 1972 was a long time ago.
Yes, it is. although the Bruins had a great season, and I think there's hope as a fan for you going forward.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next year, and I'm hoping Tim Thomas can maintain his level of play. But what I was wanting to talk to you about was the NHL's affiliation. I know it's probably not a large one off of other than the draft, but we have in Spokane a major junior hockey franchise, and that's, I've got season tickets, and that's the closest I'll ever have to a pro team. But the major junior governing body, the CHL, has the majority of teams are in Canada, which I'm sure you know. But every league now has one U.S.-based team at least, and as a matter of fact, the Western Hockey League has a whole division of U.S.-based teams. And I've noticed that the only television coverage that is given to this league is up in Canada on the Shaw Network. And I'm curious if the NHL Network would ever consider, which, by the way, I love too, it's the only channel I watch anymore, would ever consider possibly running some games from the CHL league in, as they do for the ECHL and the AHL.
Actually, it's a great question, and it's something that we've been talking about. We've gotten the NHL Network up and running to what we think are very strong reviews. People love the highlights on the fly at night, particularly on the fly final. We actually got the rights to the World Juniors, which we televised a few weeks ago, and we are on the hunt for new and additional programming, not just necessarily for the NHL Network, but also for NHL.com because of our increased broadband capability. The other point in terms of our support of major junior hockey is we have a very substantial, involving many, many, many millions of dollars that we pay to the CHL to help with the development of players. So we are a big believer in junior hockey.
You know, this is an incredible time to be a fan of any sport, because you and I are both old enough to remember when, if we were lucky, if we turned our radio dials just to the right tweakage, just about, we might be able to get some out-of-town game that would fill us with rapture just to be able to be in contact with it. Now we can watch every game every night on just about every sport in just about every league, and we can even discuss the possibility of having Spokane on the NHL Network. What a great benefit it's been to watch this evolution take place.
Technology is a wonderful thing for us as a sports league that we think historically at least has been underexposed, to reach our fans with as much hockey content as is humanly imaginable. Mike in South Jersey, you're on XM204 with Frank and Gary.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
Good. And I just want to also say how wonderful the NHL Network is. It's just a fantastic channel. I mean, for those fans who can't afford center ice, it's fantastic. The nightly on the fly, which goes from game to game to game. I mean, that's, if I had center ice, I mean, that's what I'd be doing anyway, going from game to game to game.
Well, thank you for that endorsement, and we appreciate it because we're pretty proud of the network.
Right, and as a Flyer fan, I just want to say to the rest of the league, the Flyers are on to the next round, so get over it. For the past couple days, I've been listening to, Caps fans and other fans saying, you know, how controversial some of those calls, non-calls, the possible interference, and I'm so happy that you don't think it was interference. But then if I was on the other end of that, I'd be crying bloody murder myself. So I can sympathize with the Caps fans. But, you know, it's and I think you pointed it out before, the referees make mistakes as well. And, I don't envy their job. It's you know, and being a season ticket holder and seeing the games live, and they go through a lot. And what a lot of people don't see on TV is on the breaks, you see a lot of the referees start shaking their fingers at some of the players, you know, giving them warnings, saying that, you know what, you know, don't do that. Next time we're going to call that. And they give them a little bit of a leeway, especially in the playoffs. And with respect to putting whistles away, it's frustrating as anything. I mean, even being a Flyer fan, I mean, but, you know, it comes to the point, especially in the third, or especially in the overtime, you know, enough was enough. You know, you got a slash on a stick. The stick is broken. It's, you know, and that's automatic in the regular season. You know, and then you see these trips, and you see some potential boarding and hooking and roughing. And, you know, and I appreciate the, you know, especially like the interferences or the non-interferences, the hooks, you know, letting that go. But, you know, when you got some blatant penalties, you know, you got to do enough is enough. But then again, you know, I don't envy the position of the referees. Like, when do you make that call?
Well, and in fact, the officials that work Game 7 between them, I think, had 50 years of experience. They are among the better officials. But, you know, I assumed that there were some fans out there who felt the way you did in terms of the result of the game. But I would be terribly remiss if I didn't point out that the Caps organization, Ted Leonsis, the owner, Coach Bruce Boudreau, complete class. They did not complain at all about the calls, and that they believe that the players ultimately decided the game, which is the way it should be, and there was no recrimination from the Washington organization. Which I think is a demonstration of great sportsmanship and class. For those of you who are still on the lines, I apologize if we don't get to you, but we do have another special guest who I'd like to spend a couple of minutes with on the phone. Joining us is Pat LaFontaine. Pat, are you on with us?
Hey, I'm on, Gary. How are you?
I'm great. You know, everybody knows what a great player you were, third overall pick in the 83 draft, your lifetime regular season of 1,013 points. But I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your special project, Companions in Courage. It's a foundation that you've set up. Talk about what it does, because it's so special.
Well, hey, thanks, Gary. We had a great launch yesterday right there in New York City, and the Companions in Courage Foundation builds lion dens rooms in children's hospitals, and they're really safe havens for kids who are isolated and put into a, you know, and go into a children's hospital and have to go through a difficult time in their life. And so we created these rooms with Edwin Schlossberg right there in New York City, and the walls curve in, and the ceiling tiles and the wall tiles change colors, and we put in Xbox 360 games, and we put in a plasma TV screen with a bunch of great movies for the kids. We have computers, and we have a video conferencing pod that allows the kids to talk to teachers and their friends and maybe a grandparent who can't see them or travel to see them when they're going through a tough time. And so we created these really awesome safe havens that kids can escape to and just be a kid again in a children's hospital. And the neat thing about yesterday was we partnered up with Microsoft and we created the Xbox 360 kiosk. And the kiosk is actually, it comes full circle because the kids that can't make it to a lion's den room now, the kids that are in isolation or getting prepped for surgery, we can now wheel this Xbox 360 with a monitor and a TV camera, a little camera that's not a TV but a small camera that's on it, and allow the kids to still feel connected to the lion's den and play games. And the exciting thing about what Microsoft did with Companions in Courage yesterday was we created really, it's the first really online private gaming network affiliated just with children's hospitals and the Lion's Den rooms along with these kiosks. So it was really special, and I was really excited because we had three Anaheim Ducks on with us. We had live games going with celebrities and athletes who were at all three events. We had Seattle Children's Hospital, Morgan Stanley Children's Hospital in New York City, and the CHOC Children's Hospital of Orange County. And we had celebrities saying hello to the kids and on the actual, you know, the monitors, and then right away playing a game with them. And Scott Niedermeyer and Brad May and Todd Bertuzzi were on, and Teddy Nolan and Rick DiPietro came in and helped out also during the time. So it's a great event for Companions in Courage and for Microsoft Xbox 360.
So if any of our listeners want to get involved and help you with this great cause, what do they do?
Well, Gary, they can go on the www.cic16.org, cic16.org.
And, you know, I can attest to the incredible passion that Pat has for this cause and for the children that he helps, because on two occasions I ran a half marathon on Long Island for Companions in Courage, and I was when I could keep up with Pat, I was next to him. Basically, he left me in the dust long before we reached the finish line. But if you ever saw Pat before a game, which I was privileged to do when I covered him as a player, the same intensity, the same expression on his face that I saw on game days is the same intensity that I see on his face when he talks about this cause.
Well, Patty, thank you for all you're doing. It's another great example of what athletes and former athletes do to give back to the community. And if there's anything we can do, let us know.
Well, it's great what you guys are doing. Thanks for your support. And Gary and Frank, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. That was Pat LaFontaine on behalf of a great cause, Champions in Courage.
Companions in Courage.
I'm sorry, Companions in Courage, www.cic16.org. And as we said, Companions in Courage. Frank, I must thank you for filling in. I'm not sure if I get a bill back next week, either Mr. Clement or Mr. Daly, but you were absolutely a delight to have here today. And I thank you for correcting me on that Bruce Springsteen song. To our listeners, this has been the NHL Hour. Coming up next is In the Slot with Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy. We'll be back next Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Until then, goodbye, have a great week, and watch the playoffs. The games are going to be great.
Enjoy.
The puck drops every day on the world's fastest sport with NHL Home Ice, the world's first 24/7 hockey channel, XM 204.